Welcome to The Checkout. Today's episode is produced in partnership with Acres USA. Hope you enjoy.
Acres USA, the voice of eco-agriculture, is committed to being a lifelong educational partner for farmers and ranchers around the world. Since 1971, we've joined forces with farmers and ranchers who care about soil health to produce events, books, magazines, and online learning courses. From a farmer who's just getting started to an experienced professional who just won't settle for good enough, wherever you are in your journey, we're here to help you. Visit acresusa.com to learn more and catch our Tractor Time podcast anywhere you find podcasts.
Welcome to The Checkout. Michelle Flores, Development Director of Brand Workers. So excited to have you on the show.
Thank you, Earl. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you.
Brand Workers is one of my favorite, you know, worker-oriented groups in the food industry. Tell our audience, how did Brand Workers come about?
Sure. Well, Brand Workers came about when our founder, Daniel Gross, was approached by workers at a seafood processing facility who were facing a lot of issues on their job, primarily wage theft, but also issues with management and not having their voice recognized, of course, in their workplace. So that's how we came about. We've been around since 2007.
That's amazing. Who are the main stakeholder groups Brand Workers is organizing with? And how is the organization structured?
Sure. So Brand Workers is an organization of food factory workers based here in New York and expanding. But the primary constituency of Brand Workers are food factory workers here in the city. There's about 35,000 food factory workers in New York City.
Wow.
So it's a very big industry. It's actually the fastest growing industry in New York City. Brings in $5 billion to the city every year. So a huge group of workers. Most of those workers, over 90%, are workers of color. Mm-hmm. And most of which are immigrants. That's who we work with.
How's the organization structured?
Sure. So the key value of Brand Workers and our organizing principle is that food workers are capable of organizing themselves, right? That they have the power and the ability and the knowledge and the skill and everything they need to organize themselves. And so the organization is led by workers. It's led by a board that is made up of food factory workers and their allies. And the organizing is led by organizing committees within the factories. So that's the core structure. The Brand Workers is also an organization, a nonprofit organization. So our staff supports worker leadership. And we have a staff of eight people right now. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what are some of the issues affecting food system workers in New York City that you guys are addressing?
Sure. Many issues. Even before the pandemic, food manufacturing jobs are very dangerous jobs. So over 40% of workers are injured on the job, right? So this is a huge issue for workers. Very few workers the wages are low, right? So wage theft is rampant. A lot of time workers are not being paid overtime. they might not be receiving pay stubs. There's a lot of issues just having to deal with people's basic respect and dignity, not being respected on the job. And one of the ways that manifests is in rampant discrimination based on race, and primarily based on race and gender, but other kinds of discrimination that come up as well around people's Indigenous origin and sexuality. But there are very steep wage penalties for undocumented workers who form a very important segment of the food worker, population in New York City. So the workers face a lot. And for women workers and women workers of color, immigrant women workers of color in particular, all of these things are compounded. Discrimination in hiring, discrimination in promotions, disrespect from management and sometimes from their colleagues. There's a lot of, it's a tough job.
Yeah.
It's a tough job. Yeah.
What was the organizing like in these facilities and who led it?
Sure. So the brand workers, so our basic, strategy really starts at the level of the factory, and organizing committees within factories. So, we could talk about different campaigns, but just generally speaking, the way that we organize really has to do with supporting workers one-on-one to, in their very difficult decision to organize, right? So given all the things I said about the issues that workers are facing in the factories, the decision to organize is a huge decision that requires a lot of courage for people to take on. And so brand workers organizers are able to support workers in one-on-one conversations identify the power structures that exist within their workplace, right? Identify leadership on the shop floor, understand how to coordinate with their colleagues to make their campaign successful. Understanding how to talk not just with their colleagues, but how to, think strategically about when and how to talk about organizing to protect themselves and get them, put them in the best position to express the power that they have. So brand workers, core organizing, that's where it starts. That's where it really, that's really the core of our work. And that's the core. I'm just trying to, I'll stick with that for a second.
Yeah. No problem. So when we talk about brand workers, who are, just curious, some of the initial targets of these organizing campaigns, or what sectors, or any names you can name, I'm just curious, the actors that were mistreating workers, and the way that you guys have positioned your work in terms of organizing against these sort of hipster, supposedly progressive, food companies that obviously are not.
Yeah, sure. So, some of the early, one of the things that happens with food manufacturing is it can be made invisible. And one of the ways it's made invisible is that it gets rebranded. For example, if a restaurant is selling a Tomcat Bakery product, it might not be communicating that to its customers, right? So from the beginning, we call our factory level strategy, we call it un cuerpo dos brazos, which is really where the cuerpo is the worker unity, and the dos brazos are direct action in the factory floor, and then ally support in the retail market, right? So part of what, you know, and I wasn't there at the beginning of Brand Workers, but part of what we're talking about when we talk about brands and we talk about the retail market is the way that allies can support workers who are taking the risk and doing the organizing on the factory floor, how we can surface, you know, the work that is happening, you know, in sometimes obscure factories in Brooklyn and Queens and the Bronx, factories that people might not be aware of, but then they go to their favorite restaurants and you go to, you know, the top 10 restaurants in New York City, these Michelin star places, these really fancy places, and that, you know, the sauce or the bread or the seafood or something has been produced in this factory and processed in this factory. And it's about really surfacing that and making it visible to the community and the consumers of those brands. So so to name names, you know, the campaign that I was talking about first, you know, that where Brand Workers was approached was a seafood processing plant called Wild Edibles. You know, in 2010, I think, we had a campaign with Flaum Appetizing, you know, where workers were. Errol, sorry, the audio got disrupted because of a phone call. So Flaum Appetizing, again, I mentioned Tomcat Bakery because workers, mm-hmm. you know, members of Brand Workers have been organizing there since, I think, 2011. You know, a bakery where that bread is served in restaurants all over the city, you know, very, you know, very expensive. Sorry, just an audio interruption. I'm sorry, it's the Bluetooth.
No problem.
Let me, if you don't mind, just 1 second, I can pause and plug myself in so we don't get interrupted more.
My audio now, you know, and then, you know, other companies like Amy's Bread, right, where we had an organizing committee for a long time that made significant gains there. Where workers had been organizing since 2013. And Amy's Bread is the kind of company where they've managed to cultivate the image of a sort of responsible local employer. But when it comes to workers organizing, it is a very different experience than what they would want to project out there. So, yeah.
What were some of the major victories or accomplishments of these organizing campaigns?
Sure. So there's been a bit of a, you know, like a lot of worker centers, there's been a bit of a shift over the years with Brand Workers. In the early campaigns, there was a strong focus on recovering, you know, recovering wages and obviously building power with workers in the factory. So trying to couple the sort of legal victories with more longstanding power gains within factories. You know, like I mentioned the workers at Tomcat Bakery who started organizing in 2011, and they were able to, you know, not just remove an exploitative and abusive manager, but also to transform the system where some workers were being paid through a different company. And they were able to preserve some of the benefits that they had won previously. Mm-hmm. In you know, similarly, like with Beverage Plus, and this is an older campaign from 2012 that involved warehouse workers and delivery drivers who had been experiencing significant wage theft. Workers were able to recover, you know, almost $1 million wow. in back wages. You know, in so there's been these sorts of gains. And I think, like, just to return back to the Tomcat victory, one of the things that's so compelling about the work that workers have done there is that they, you know, they started organizing with brand workers a long time ago. I mean, 10 years ago now, right? And were able to secure the issues that they were facing then. And, you know, sort of many of the workers worked there for a long time. So then in 2017, when they face an ICE audit, there was already the sort of organizing infrastructure in the sense of workers who had experience with organizing and winning on the in the factory to then organize against this sort of, you know, with this newest, you know, issue that they were confronting. So I think that, you know, it's less, it's more difficult to put a pin on that, but what it is, mm-hmm. is when you have workers who are organized and have the experience that they've internalized, that they understand it, they know what it takes to win. That's where you get a long-term relationship and long-term power in a factory, so that when workers face something again, they have that knowledge base and that power to organize again. So I think that that's a really big victory for the workers there.
So you've mentioned organizing and a lot, but I haven't heard you mention collective bargaining or unionizing. And I'm just curious what the distinction is and how you guys see that with building a worker-centered organization.
Sure. So the goal, you know, what Brand Workers is doing right now is building a union of workers within the industrial workers of the world, and based on that model of solidarity unionism. The difference is the sort of fundamental principle that workers are really able and best positioned to win those gains in the shop floor through direct action. Mm-hmm. The main goal isn't to have a contract enforced by the law, but to have real material gains that are enforced by workers themselves.
Wow, that sounds like a pretty powerful distinction.
Yes. It really rests on this fundamental idea that workers, that power comes from the workers themselves, right? And that it can be enforced by workers themselves, that it doesn't take, you know, a favorable legal situation, you know, that's not reliable. It doesn't take, you know, the kindness of, you know, socially responsible companies, but rather that the workers themselves can decide, that the workers themselves are where the power is. And the fastest and best way for them to express it is through direct action.
That's amazing. And it's also amazing that you guys have affiliated with IWW, Industrial Workers of the World, as I had actually hung out with them. This is like 25 years ago when I was in school, and I, you know, I love the history of the Wobblies and, you know, Big Bill Haywood and Mother Jones and, you know, One Big Union. And, you know, I didn't really get much out of it. It was pretty, you know, it was pretty quiet around that time. Just to see that you guys have applied that model and working with primarily immigrant and people of color, immigrant workers in, you know, in cities and in industry is really compelling. Do you actually mind talking just maybe for 1 minute about IWW itself, in case folks don't understand what that is?
I'm nervous to talk about it because I don't know. Hopefully you can edit this out.
Oh, no worries. No worries.
I feel like, I don't know if I'm going to be the best carrier.
I'm totally putting you on the spot, so we can just totally edit this out.
Yeah, but I can refer you to lots of people. Like, I know you were asking about like books that we're reading and stuff, but that I think getting into the history of like Local 8 and the Philadelphia dock workers, you know,
Bill Fletcher. Yeah, I've actually got the book on my desk because I'm a PM Press member. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's actually awesome. How we got in touch because the dude from PM Press said, "I love your podcast." And then Daniel did like the cover blurb. Daniel Gross did the cover blurb and put us in touch anyway.
Oh, that's amazing. Amazing. And so Peter Cole is like a big friend of Brand Workers, right? Who just came out with this with this new autobiography of Ben Fletcher. But I was reading in there about the structure longshore work, in the 30s and putting that in the perspective of like Prop 22 right now and like what people are trying to do with like independent contractors and zero work contracts in the UK, like this kind of thing. You know, it's the, a lot of that stuff's being talked about as if it's something new, as if like having, as if exploiting workers in this particular way is new, when it's clear, like the whole shape up system was really about like, we want you to be on call and we're not going to pay you except for this very, very discrete bit of work, you know? And I don't see what's different from that than an Uber driver who's, you know, having to idle and like look for jobs and wait for jobs in between. It's almost exactly the same thing. So, what I'm inspired about with our partnership with the IWW is having a model where, that again, this is the value. The value is that workers are able to independently organize. They're able to independently organize. They're able to do it today to now, like without having to wait for anybody, without having to wait for a contractor to get permission. They're able to do it on the job right now. And, you know, it's very inspiring, especially right now, to be able to draw on a history of interracial organizing, of a union that was open to all workers when many unions were not.
Yeah.
And I think, there's, so there's a lot of really great history to draw on and to draw on in terms of like the IWW throughout the world and how it's been inspiring to people, not just in the US, but to in many of the communities where workers who are organizing in New York, where they come from, right? So it's a truly global union where people can be, inspired by something that reflects their own histories and just a tradition of being open to all people.
So. That's amazing. Yeah, no, I definitely invite folks to read up on the IWW. Like I mentioned earlier, I'd really been interested in it like 20, 25 years ago, and hung out with them in New York. And I'm, more than pleasantly surprised, like just really stoked that it's taken on this relevance, especially given the history and the roots of it and this interracial anti-racist work. And you mentioned the present moment. I want to talk a bit about COVID-19.
Sure.
And just curious how the onset of COVID-19 has impacted campaign strategies in addition to, the working conditions and organizing needs of the folks that you guys are organizing.
Yeah. The pandemic has been extremely hard on food workers and extremely hard on brand workers members. In the beginning, things in terms of the work, things went in a couple different directions. In some cases, workers were being asked to work very long shifts and additional hours as, you know, demand in some places went up. And then, you know, in other cases, in many other cases, factories closed down and a lot of workers lost their jobs, or, you know, there were massive reductions in staff. So just on just the pure production level, job insecurity has been a really big issue. And then the level of, or the just the lack of protection in the workplace. So, you know, employers not providing PPE, you know, workers not having access to healthcare or sick days, has had really extreme impacts on brand workers members. So, you know, our first way of responding to this was really to reach out to people and have conversations with people, understand what the need was in our community and figure out what we could do to support people. We were also, so that, you know, that was really our first response. And, you know, in terms of campaign strategies, like, you know, our basic campaign model is not changed by the pandemic, right? But I think, you know, there has been a lot of work to do within the context of COVID to, you know, just respond to the massive, just the magnitude of grief and pressure that workers are facing, right? So we were able to distribute $50,000 of direct aid to people. We were able to, you know, support the family of a worker, one of the organizers from the Tomcat campaign got sick and he passed. And we were able to support his family through that. We were also able to fundraise for, you know, for direct mutual aid within our own organization, over $25,000 for the Tomcat worker organizers. And then because we were, you know, involved with some of the distribution of those funds that came from a private foundation, we were able to have, you know, conversations with workers and respond to the demand that workers are having to organize, right? So we were able to reach new workers and support them in their organizing demands right now, which has been really great to see, you know, as part of what's happened as a result of COVID. But a lot of our response has really just been listening to people, hearing people, and understanding what's going out there and doing as much as we could to support people individually.
Awesome. You know, with a new administration in the White House, we're doing this interview in February of 2021. With a new administration in the White House, you know, have the key priorities for brand workers changed? Or is it, you know, status quo, you got to do what you got to do?
Yeah, because our model is really based on, you know, the workers as the center of power and the main protagonists in their, you know, struggle for dignified work. Our priorities don't really change one administration to the next. it's really just about how the administration's actions kind of impact our strategic landscape, right? And, you know, we've seen Democratic administrations in the past that don't necessarily add up to a more favorable organizing environment.
Yeah. So, anybody who was paying attention during the Clinton years, I hear you.
So our, you know, our priorities remain pretty solid with supporting workers to take action where they are.
Right. And so what are you guys hoping to accomplish in the next few years? Like where are things going, you know, with the pandemic and, you know, with the economy and, you know, with the shutdown of food service and just all this insecurity, but what does this mean for organizing efforts?
Sure. Well, one thing I would just say is that there's a huge opportunity for organizing in food manufacturing. One, because it's a, you know, it's a fast growing and very significant part of the New York City economy, but also in the economies of other major cities. And there's, you know, in, I think an increased demand in urban areas for, you know, locally produced food products that are driving growth in this industry. So, you know, and on top of that, and one of the things the pandemic has shown is that it's an absolutely indispensable part of the economy. I mean, as, you know, as someone who's worked in the food industry for a long time, you already know that. I think that, so there's a huge opportunity here for worker organizing. I think there's also a really big opportunity in this, in the political moment where the economic crisis, the pandemic and the you know, economic crisis that's going along with it has really laid bare some of the more problematic aspects of the way our economy is set up, right? And so as people are becoming more aware of these issues and as workers are, you know, in really amazing acts of courage, starting to take more direct action. You know, we've seen an increase in strikes, you know, wildcat strikes. I think the moment is really ripe to see, you know, a strong upsurge of worker organizing in food factories here in New York City and beyond. So, you know, as people who've been doing the work here for over 14 years now, it's really exciting to think about this moment and this opportunity to support workers through that. We have campaigns in several factories in the region that we're really looking forward to continue to supporting the workers to win. So what, you know, what I see in the next few years is the continued strengthening of our worker organizing committees and a hopeful trajectory of gains within those factories that can start to turn, you know, turn the needle in terms of what it looks like to have a food factory job here in New York City and what it would look like to transform that industry so that you know, so that we can have a more beautiful, a healthier, you know, food chain here in the city.
Yeah, let's talk a bit more about that. That's usually one of our last questions is like, you know, what does that look like, a fair and just food system, especially in New York, where there's so much manufacturing on the one hand, but on the other hand, you know, with the recent Hunts Point Market strike, you know, obviously a lot of food needs to be imported into New York as well. You know, what does this food system look like? And then, you know, what role do your worker members, you know, play in that type of system?
Sure. Well, part of what's so beautiful about our model is that I think with, you know, workers expressing their full power, that is also the power of the community, right? So people who produce food also consume the food. And so we can think about what that vision is by thinking about what it would look like to have an organized workforce from farms to distribution to warehousing to food production to the restaurant and retail industries. And I think with workers expressing their power in at all of those different stops along the food chain, we would see a completely different food landscape in our city, you know, where fresh, healthy food were available to all of our communities, right? And that people would be able to afford it because the standards would be more equalized and higher. So that's the vision. And the key to that is really workers being able to express their power, not just in the factory, but between factories in single, in food product categories, within the food production industry, and then solidarity across the food chain, right? So solidarity between food production workers and street vendors, solidarity between restaurant workers and street vendors, solidarity with all of these workers and grocery workers and farm workers. So really creating, you know, the structures and the worker organizing power that could, that could mobilize that solidarity across the food chain.
That's actually really interesting. You mentioned grocery workers. Obviously, I came out of that world. I worked for a non-union grocer for many years. New York City is interesting in that it's got a mix of non-union as well as union grocers. What is the response by unionized grocers to this type of work, and or if you've even seen that? And then, you know, in terms of like non-union grocery workers, like a Trader Joe's or a Whole Foods, like, what's the types of responses that you've seen, you know, from those shops? I'm just curious if there's a difference or if there's any pattern there.
Sure. Well, Brand Workers has, benefited from the solidarity of organized workers and their unions in the city. So when we've organized campaigns, we've had a lot of support from unions here, from the UFCW, from RWDSU, from the Teamsters locals here. So, we've been very lucky to have that solidarity and workers showing up for each other. I think there's a lot of room to grow there. And I think as workers and with more organizing and with more growth in and density of organized workforce, we would see that solidarity grow as well. And my hope is that it would be driven by workers themselves.
Sure. So the last question we like to ask here, you saw it come in, is book recommendations on, in particular, anything on organizing history, on, you know, these sort of food sector campaigns. That would be fantastic.
Sure. Well, we already talked a little bit about the Ben Fletcher book, and we're, book, you know, yeah. So that's a great one. And because I'm not Danielle, I also get to recommend his book with Staunton Lynn, Labor Law for the Rank and Filer, which is a great,
awesome.
You know, it's a great reference and resource for people who want to organize, for workers who want to organize.
Your founder, Daniel Gross, is he a lawyer?
He is.
Oh, that's amazing. That means he knows what he's talking about. I actually want to plug Staunton Lind. I love his books, Solidary Unionism, and some of the other stuff he's done. He's one of my favorites. Sorry, go ahead.
It's okay. I'll just dissent very, very lightly that just because people are lawyers doesn't always mean that they know what they're doing or talking about. Daniel does know what he's talking about.
Okay, that's good.
About.
That's good.
good
save.
And
I'm actually amazed, though, that you guys have a lawyer who's an organizer as a co-founder. I think that's wonderful.
you know, so the, yeah. Well, I mean, there's lots of lawyers out there who are also organizers.
Sure.
So yeah. Yeah, but yes, we're very lucky. Like me personally, I'm very excited about Sarah Jaffe's new book, Work Won't Love You Back.
I've ordered it already.
yeah. So I'm really, she's a great writer. So I'm really excited about that. For me, you know, I've never read Parable of the Sowers. So I just checked that out from the library. I know. So I'm really excited about that.
Devastating. It is just so, so good.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. That's, you know, that's what we're reading here.
Nice. A little Octavia Butler. That'll go a long way. I'd recommend N.K. Jemisin too.
Yes. My partner just finished reading The City We Became.
Yes, The City.
So that's it. I'm going to have to get in there too. I'm very excited about it.
And that Parable of the Sower is part one. There's a sequel, Parable of the Talents.
Okay, yeah.
So I recommend that too.
Yeah.
Right on.
Lots of good stuff to read.
Michelle Flores, Brand Workers, this is amazing, mind-blowing, paradigm-shifting work that you guys do. Any closing thoughts for our audience?
No, just a word of gratitude for your podcast. It's great, Errol, and I hope we can stay in conversation. That's all.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Thanks so much for being on the Checkout.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good one.